Welcome to episode 227 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There are links with a bit more information about today's topic available on the show page. You can find that by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
I'm awake.
48 hours later, how are you feeling?
I love life. I'm a flower.
Yeah, you're a flower.
I'm sorry.
You recently started graveyard shift.
Yes.
So are you dead?
No, I just worked the yard.
Hey, congratulations. This is your 50th episode.
Hey.
I know. We totally celebrated that like 5 episodes ago.
That's fine.
I screwed up on the math. I don't know how 177 plus 50 got turned into 222. It's not. It's 227.
Well, here we are.
Yes, but, you know, that's as much. We just celebrated it already, so yay for you.
We can celebrate now, and then to be consistent, we'll just keep doing it.
This is episode 574. Also, another one of Phil's 50th anniversary. All right, we're talking about memory.
Yes.
We did that a little bit on Monday.
I remember.
Sorry. We got one more episode on the brain.
And that's it?
Maybe two. I think, you know, we'll talk about memory
and
the amygdala and the hippocampus.
Right.
And other brain structures involved with it. And then we'll probably do one more episode where we just sort of try and
cover everything we missed.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Okay. Well, not that.
Not everything.
That would be hundreds of more episodes is what that would be. But, you know, talking about the brain in general, sort of wrap it up, kill a week while I desperately try to figure out what we're going to talk about next.
It'll come to us.
This is your first week of the graveyard shift, isn't it?
Yes, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so here we are. It's like 4 in the afternoon, and this is early morning for you now.
Theoretically, yeah. I've been working on flip-flopping. I think I'm in a good space. I don't know.
You think I'm in a good space?
Ask me at 3 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I've decided that cuteness does not live in the nucleus accumbens.
Okay, you've decided.
I have decided. I thought it did before, just because it tended to be more active when women were looking at fat babies.
Okay.
Right. But everything else, there are various people who have artificial stimulators, implants, brain implants.
Oh.
There's some for mitigating the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. There's some for trying to stop clinical depression and other things.
Oh, okay.
And the patients who have one of those in the nucleus accumbens, which is traditionally thought to be a pleasure center, apparently when they turn the stimulation on, the patient doesn't actually even notice.
Okay.
But what they do tend to do is suddenly have an urge.
To do
something. The stuff I was reading about, either something they've never gotten around to, like read that book or go visit that place, or an old hobby they did years ago. You know, I really should get back into bowling.
Ah, that's a better urge than I was thinking.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
Because
there's all sorts of urges.
One sign of heat exhaustion is the urge to defecate. Yeah, I just said that.
I didn't know that one. It occurred to me that when you see a fat baby.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about you and cuddly Cretaceous dinosaurs.
Oh, they are adorable. Yes.
Yes, and you have an urge to hug them.
I do.
You have an urge.
There we go.
That's probably why the nucleus accumbens is lining up, correlating with the urge, rather than the cuteness.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they see fat baby and they just want to like
squish
it.
Hold it and squeeze it and love it and punch it.
Eat you
up. Little cheeks.
Why is cannibalism always a...
I don't know.
Just want to chew you up. Yeah.
And then chew you up and spit you out.
Very Greek.
Greek? Yeah, you know. No, I don't.
What was it? Not Jupiter.
Okay. I see what you're talking about. Very Greek mythology.
Yes, yes. They like to swallow their babies. I
forget which one did what. I think it happened twice. It was like multi-generations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think
and it didn't work either time.
That's how people ended up hatching out of people's heads.
Well, see, there, I feel better. We were talking about the Catholic Church the last time. Now we're talking about Greek gods. So
okay, good. We span all.
We span. We span. You know what? I think we're done.
That was it. Wait, what are we going to talk about?
You don't,
remember.
You know, oh God! I'm sorry. We're talking about memory.
Yes,
we did that a little bit on Monday.
I remember.
Sorry. Well, actually, let's start with the hippocampus.
Okay.
The hippocampus is a bit of your brain.
Okay.
Located in the medial temporal lobe.
If I knew how to make a hippo noise, I would.
You know what? I actually have no idea what noises hippos make.
They have a big mouth. Can they roar?
Good question. They look like they should be able to.
Yeah.
Or do you do one heck of a...
Baw. All right.
Right, the hippocampus. Yeah. Latin for seahorse.
Oh.
Because it's vaguely seahorse shaped.
I would not have known that at all.
And it isn't just about memory, but that's a function it's best known for.
Okay.
But one of the other things it's useful for is helping you figure out where you are.
That's important.
Yes, there's little cells in there. They call place cells.
Okay.
Yes, they call them that. Because, like, say you are somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know, in the kitchen, by the microwave.
Right.
There would be a little cell there going off.
Location found.
Yeah, pretty much, because you wander away and come back there later. That same cell is going to fire again.
Cool.
You got these little mental maps. And they live a lot in your hippocampus. They also live in a place called the entorhinal cortex.
In your nose?
Yeah. It's right next. Okay. So all these things we've been talking about, and we're saying everything goes to the hippocampus, right?
Right.
And I'm reading about the hippocampus and says, well, actually, everything goes to the entorhinal cortex.
Ah.
So... who's lying?
That's a mystery. They're still updating textbooks.
They have something they call the hippocampal formation.
Okay.
And different people argue about which bits are included in that. But the entorhinal cortex is often included, along with something called the dentate gyrus.
Teeth?
Teeth. Not to be confused with the dentate nucleus.
Oh, I knew we talked about
that. Yes, yes. The dentate nucleus lives in the cerebellum. And that's not what we're talking about. This is called the dentate gyrus because it has a sort of beaded or toothed appearance.
Ah, okay.
Which is the result of the various blood vessels going around in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so information comes into the entorhinal cortex and then it'll hit the dentate gyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Which has only three layers.
Does it gyrate?
Gyrus being one of those folds.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to, or one of the hills, as opposed to one of the valleys.
Okay.
And it's got three layers, unlike the six-layer neocortex.
Okay.
In the middle is a bunch of granule cells. From the granule cells go mossy fibers.
Okay.
Which reach the middle layer of another part of the hippocampus, the hippocampus proper.
Ah.
Which is the pyramidal cells. Pyramidal? Pyramidal.
They look pyramids. Like pyramids.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they do.
Okay.
Now, these cells are interesting because left to their own devices, the pyramidal cells would fire all the time.
Oh, okay.
So they are connected to things called basket cells.
Right.
They will send a little axon over and tickle a basket cell.
Mm-hmm.
Which will cause the basket cell to go back and tickle the pyramidal cell.
Uh-huh.
And the basket cell calms the pyramidal cell down.
Okay.
So it's got its own built-in negative feedback inhibiting mechanism.
So post-tickle fest, everybody calms down?
Yes, that's exactly what happens.
It's a weird picture in my head.
Once upon a time, about 1953, a patient had the hippocampus removed.
Okay.
Actually, both of them. There's one on either side of the brain.
Mm.
And he had a little trouble with his memory.
Oh, okay.
As you would expect. But there's some interesting specificness to the loss of memory. He was unable to form new memories.
Okay.
And some of what he had known before the operation was lost, but his childhood memories were intact.
Hey, interesting.
In fact, the older the memory, the more likely he was able to recall it.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, though he couldn't lay down a memory like I remember yesterday, learning how to do this little test where I draw on something with a mirror,
okay,
he got better at it.
Well, okay.
Yeah, so the task is to draw a line between these other two lines, using a mirror to do it.
Uh-huh.
And even though he never remembered doing this particular test previously, over time he got better at it.
Oh, neat.
Your procedural memory,
mm-hmm.
your memory for skills,
right,
lives in a different place than your memory of your life.
So losing your hippocampus, you can still get really good at your job.
Depending yeah. upon what the job is. Well, if the job is to remember what happened yesterday, no.
I was just a production environment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, I remember I went to Dad. I said, how do you tie a tie?
Mm-hmm.
And so he tried to tie it on me, and he couldn't.
yeah, right?
And he tied it on himself. And he could tie it, but he couldn't do it if he slowed it down at all and thought about what he was doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing happens in music all the time. It can be really frustrating if you're trying to write a song and your hands play something wonderful. And you have no idea what just happened.
Do it again. Anytime somebody's trying to train somebody how to do something they already know, then they have to slow down and think about what they
mm-hmm.
what they've learned or how they do what they do. Yeah.
There's a danger that they will lose the skill temporarily.
You just watch their eyes and they glaze and they're like, okay, you...
It seems like procedural learning or learning for skills seems to live in the basal ganglia and cerebellum more than the cerebrum and hippocampus.
Mm.
But there's the hippocampus.
There it is.
There's a sort of cycle that happens. First, somewhere in your cortex, a memory forms.
Okay.
And that's going to live for a while. It's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
This patient who lost bits of his hippocampus,
mm-hmm.
he could remember things for a short period of time.
Okay.
My favorite bit was apparently he could remember a number if he kept rehearsing it to himself.
Oh.
Managed to keep the number in his memory for about 15 minutes. Even though about 5 minutes into it, he couldn't remember why he was trying to remember this number anymore.
I'm up to something. Let's just run with it. I don't know what's happening right now.
And that rehearsal trick is actually what your brain does unconsciously to transfer a memory from where it lived originally through the hippocampus and back to somewhere in your cortex.
Unconsciously.
Seems to happen a lot while you're sleeping.
Hmm.
The memory will be replayed, and especially with those place neurons, they can kind of watch it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and another interesting bit about that is that the replay, okay. temporally, it will go forwards in time, it will go backwards in time, it will go much faster than the original stimulus.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's just kind of carving itself into your memories, like...
Bit by painful bit.
Maybe carving is the wrong word.
Well, you want to know what actually happens?
Does it hurt?
It will when I tell you about it. You've got a couple of nerve cells, and they are hanging out together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the axons reaches the dendrite of the others, and they meet at this little gap called a synapse.
Okay.
When... the upstream neuron,
mm-hmm.
presynaptic,
mm-hmm.
releases a signal,
right,
and the postsynaptic neuron receives it.
Mm-hmm.
Changes may occur, depending upon the type of transmitter.
Okay.
Most neural transmitters, they just open up an ion channel. Ions flow through the membrane, changes the voltage, and you might get the spike.
Okay.
Send the message. Other neurons will sort of... other transmitters will change the mode of the neuron.
Mm.
Instead of binding to some little thingy and opening up a channel, it turns a key in a lock and sends a secondary message cascade, they call it.
Do they?
A lot of these are called G-protein-coupled receptors. And they include a lot of the neural transmitters that are, like, famous. Dopamine, serotonin, mm-hmm. acetylcholine.
Oh, that last one.
Yeah, they're famous. Famous. These don't actually get taken up when they bind to a receptor. They turn the little key. Mm. And this is a protein that goes through the membrane. And so when it gets twisted, and a mechanism inside the cell gets activated.
Okay.
And then a little protein sort of drifts along inside the cell.
Oh.
And it will bind to one of the ion channels from the opposite direction.
brain. Okay.
Yeah, this is complicated. And it's usually a slower system. But things like plants, for example, they use this kind of message cascade all the time.
Plants have memory?
We'd have to make a whole episode about that.
Okay, never mind.
Anyway, things that it can change. It can change the number of ion channels, mm-hmm. how easily they open, how much neural transmitter is being produced, mm-hmm. or how many receptors there are. Mm. Normal, most, this happens on a couple of different time scales. The changes can last for a few minutes or a few hours. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, if you're in the middle of your memory consolidation, mm-hmm. that whole secondary messenger cascade includes expressing different genes.
Weird.
To make different proteins.
Okay.
To make a more permanent change.
Like new blinking?
Like, say more receptors.
Ah.
Just for an example. And then the strength of the signal on that synapse has been changed. And that change will persist, possibly for the rest of your life.
So it does hurt. It hurts me.
No painful memories. Okay. But yeah, to be clear, memories are formed by the secondary messenger cascades. Mm. And it's the change of the synapse, not a change in where the neurons are connected, that apparently stores them. Now, there are other people who argue other things, right. But this is the most popular theory or model.
Huh. This is wild. So, yeah. You know, I always thought of neurons relinking themselves and connecting to each other to make new webs or something to form the memory, you know?
As opposed to just going, well, that sort of happens. Mm. If neuron A normally doesn't fire.
Right.
And then a new memory comes along and you've got a new association. Mm-hmm. And now it does fire. Downstream, that's going to change which neurons are going to act and when. So you're going to get different networks lighting up without having to rewire anything.
Okay. There's this light show in your head.
If pictures. Only you knew. Well, anyway, that's about as much brain business as we need to do. Although I think we'll do a general brain business episode.
Just get
tie up some loose ends.
Yeah. Get rid of the extra stuff.
And also, you know, procrastinate for a while so I can figure out what we're going to talk about next.
Plants. No, okay.
Anyway, we'll see you then.
Bye.